welcome to the Critical Eye Asia podcast, Inspiring Leaders to Succeed. These podcasts are partly a review and partly expanding on subjects which are at the forefront of business leaders' minds. Always topical, thought-provoking, and enabling you to learn from leaders and peers who are delivering amazing results. With me today, I have Benny Goh, who is currently a Critical Eye board mentor, non-executive director at Cyber Data Center, innovation advisor at IPI Singapore, and non-executive director at Tactic. And also Margaret Rumpf, who is vice president and global marketing head at GlaxoSmithKline PLC, also based in Singapore. Series of Critical Eye Asia podcasts. And I'm delighted to have with us today two very distinguished guests, one from our executive membership and one of our board mentors. And we're going to be discussing today some of the themes which came out originally from our April's Asia Leadership Retreat, but they're topics that are top of mind of many of our members and board mentors in the discussion, certainly the ones that I'm having here in Asia Pacific, and I know that our members across Europe and UK are having. And these particular topics are rebuilding and strengthening leadership capability and also purpose and alignment, and the two of which are fairly keenly linked. But I'm looking forward to having this discussion. And before we go any further, I'd like to introduce two speakers and our guests this afternoon, Benny Goh, based in Singapore, and Margaret Rumpf, also in Singapore. Welcome to you both, and thank you both very much for joining us.
Thanks, Michael.
Thanks, Margaret. Benny, you've been with Critical Eye for a number of years and would have been involved in mentoring a number of our members. And so, let alone from your own personal sort of executive and non-executive experience, also the conversations you have with our members, you have quite a good broad view of some of the challenges that leaders are having today across the region. If I can start with you with a sort of question on leadership and management. If we look back to sort of 2.5, 3 years ago, and then compared to today, what changes, if any, have you seen in management teams or boards that were around the sort of leadership styles and priorities, and which you could say are fundamentals? And have you seen any changes in these over the past 2.5 to 3 years?
Well, absolutely. So if you look at pre-COVID versus the future, right, this is how I look at it. You look at COVID, that has disrupted lives of companies and many people. And going back again, look at pre-COVID, what have we done in terms of management tools, right? And actually, at that time, it was quite simplistic. We have emails, you know, we have face-to-face meetings, and then we have town halls, you know, fireside chats. Really to communicate, report, and really to kind of gather updates you know, for the organization, especially at the management level. So when I was president of Tyco in Asia, right, we had to fly across continents to meet up with our global CEO to update him on what's happening on my part of the world. And then I myself had my own face-to-face meetings with my leadership country leaders, my functional leaders, and just to get updates on a monthly basis. But COVID changed all that. Right? You look at COVID, you know, when borders were closed, you know, cities were locked down, we realized that some of these management procedures or processes are really not necessary. In a sense, what changed, right? It's actually technology. I mean, right now we're doing Zoom. And this tool has really aided how management is done. Right? We in the past, nobody would kind of expect the fact that we can do an update across continent using a Zoom feature like this, and then be very satisfied at the end of the day. Yeah. Board meetings were even much more stressed out when they felt that, oh, they're going to do it online or virtually. But the 2 years of lockdown, boards realized that, you know, they got to do it. And actually, in essence, right, if a board is quite a functional board, they know each other, a Zoom feature like this really helps a great deal. Now, if you look at it, then these are all management tools, right, that allow us to do it virtually. You don't have to have face-to-face meetings. You cut down on your cost of traveling and such. But the reality of it is that during COVID, a lot of managers are isolated, right? You know, the global headquarters is in Europe or in America, but over here in Asia, in each of the countries, you're isolated, right? So for a company to perform well, right, it comes back to two fundamental things, right? How you delegate authority and the level of trust that you have of leaders. So it brings back to the point of, you know, leadership pre-COVID, post-COVID, what has changed? I think the fundamentals has not changed, right? It's evergreen, right? And leadership is really about, you know, how you mobilize different groups of people in and within the organization around a common vision or goal, right? To achieve impact. And then for big organizations at scale. So this is how I define leadership.
Can I just interrupt there briefly? I think what's been really interesting, certainly from the retreat, which for many of our members was the first time we've sort of met together for two and a half years, certainly from my perspective it was. I think there's definitely a leadership style which comes across much better in person for some people than it does on a call. And I think that's left some people maybe seem that they need to improve their skills and increase their presence on things like the Zoom call, where in a room they would naturally command the room and everyone would be sort of listening in rapt attention. Whereas on a call, maybe, you know, you can see people looking down at their phones and it's maybe more difficult. I think that's an interesting point for a lot of our members have sort of looked at themselves and reflected quite literally in some instances when they look back on recorded calls and thought, crikey, I need to be doing something slightly different. And this is how I come across. So, I mean, that really a point of self-reflection has come across. And I don't know, Margaret, if you've got any thoughts on that before I go back to Benny.
I'm completely with you, Michael, on that. For some leaders, and actually many of us here within the company that I work, body language is really important. And it's not something that you can articulate very well when actually it's just your top half that's actually trying to communicate and engage with individuals. I use my hands a lot, and it's actually quite difficult to get your hands into the screen and articulate what it is that you're wanting to say. But I have to say, 2 years of taking it virtually, you do also ask yourself the question, what am I missing? And as an individual, obviously, we're all practicing to engage and connect, inspire and motivate our organisations through the screen. But I got a chance 2 years into COVID to go and actually see my team in India. And it was priceless. And I have to say, although I'm a big fan of virtual, the importance and the value of actually connecting with your individuals face to face, I felt like I was refreshed. I was starting again with my organisation. It's the little bits and pieces, the things that you do at the coffee corner, the things that you understand around the individual's family, the behaviours you see, etc. You cannot actually pick them up on screen. And I don't think we should expect our organisations to do that every day.
I think you're right. And that doesn't necessarily come down to leadership style. That's just a practical, you know, as you say, Benny, the use of technology has been fantastic. But I think, you know, getting that mix of the two and knowing when to use what, I think is fairly important. I mean, we were talking then, going back to yourself, Benny, talking about, you know, where you're coming into the values and this is really where leaders can come into their fore and putting the values of a business into practice and demonstrating in every day. Do you want to talk a bit more about that, Benny?
Yeah, so again, just to reiterate, right, the tools that we have for management cannot replace leadership. And how you choose your leaders will also aid the kind of technologies we use to communicate. Right. So, for example, if you pick the right guy, there's a level of trust, you know, and that really kind of goes a long way when we do a Zoom call, because, you know, you have actually met him before. Okay, I've got to qualify. We are not saying that we don't meet a guy and you just do a Zoom. Right? You have to know the person. You got to select the right guy. And then after that, you know, the frequent travel that we had in the past, that can be minimized. But Margaret is right. You still want to see the person face to face at some point in time, right? And this is invaluable. We cannot run away from that one. But it can minimize the kind of cost of traveling every quarter, a flight to across continents doesn't make sense anymore. So that's what we are talking about. So how do you pick the right leaders, right? And I think that is quite fundamental. And if you look at it, across global organizations, picking the right leaders becomes a very key issue because we are all tainted by our own lenses, right? I mean, you look at it, humans are very tribal in nature, right? They're tribal. So somebody who is outside of the tribe comes along, there's always a certain amount of distrust because he doesn't speak the same way, he doesn't behave the same way, doesn't eat the same food as you do. And there is that distance. So if somebody comes along and tries to manage that tribe, he's going to face some challenges. And vice versa, you plunk somebody from one tribe to another tribe across a continent, he will feel very minimized, right? So that is really an issue where, you know, we need to have that conscious understanding of that requirement that you look at people from a different lens. You cannot put on the same lens and say, if you're not like me, therefore you are not good, or maybe you are not even inadequate. So that is something that we have to be conscious about and picking the right leaders. So if you go back to what Warren Buffett has always said, right? If you look in a leader, there are three key essentials, right? One, he's got to have intelligence, he's got to be hardworking, he's got to have integrity. So these three are very fundamental. But I think the fourth point is really to have an open-mindedness of being able to pull together different diverse opinions and cultures and languages to form the right kind of rally cry, right? To get people around a mission.
Yeah. Margaret, this is something you can speak to, a very recent experience. I mean, having worked and managed teams in different geographies for GSK, I'd like to hear your experience of that and sort of some of the points on what Benny's made. But also sort of, I'd like to ask the question, you know, how important is it to have that full, deep cultural understanding of the teams you're working in, and how much of that should be balanced about just getting the job done, and where do they meet those two things, and is there an ideal mix? Lots of questions there, but this is thoughts I'm having as we're talking about this, and you're giving me lots of food for thought. So Mo, if you can speak maybe a bit about some of your experiences of different teams and how you've sort of got under the skin of those to start with, that would be great.
Yes, so I'm aligned with Benny completely in terms of certain leadership skills and capabilities being common, you know, regardless of where you are around the world, they're going to be staples. But I do also think that individuals need to have a cultural awareness, being incredibly astute in really understanding the environment they're in and how they are going to influence this team to deliver. So there's no one way. And I think the best leaders are those that can go in and adjust and adapt. Now, there are some things that are true to yourself and your identity as a leader that you will hold true. But the rest, you need to work out how are you going to engage? How are you actually going to get the job done in the best way without obviously burning bridges and doing the rest? I'll give you a great example. So I was told at one stage, that great Asian leader, but I'd love to see you. The organization said to me, we want to develop you into a global leader. And, you know, I'm an Australian background, very multicultural in the way I was brought up. And I said, yeah, that's no big deal. So they sent me to Belgium and they asked me to do a cultural integration program. And I said, I didn't need it. Really? Seriously? You know, an Australian going into Belgium, I know how to speak French, you know, all the rest of it. But I'm glad I did. They insisted and I did because I understood the fundamental. It's almost like the root of the culture of the organization. Here are a couple of things to look out for. And it actually helped me to work out how to inspire, how to motivate, how to engage and actually get the organization to move. I was the only Asian in the organization around me. I could have gone in with my style, you know, tried to adapt a bit, etc. But actually, a bit of time to reflect, to adjust your leadership style and go in intentionally, knowing how to or what to test and learn and actually go through that cultural integration piece, I think is really important as a leader. And I mean, the same goes when I went from Korea to Hong Kong. I thought it'd be the same because we're all Asian. It's not true. And learning that either the hard way, but also through your own journey as a leader, I think is really, really important.
I think that's a really important point, is that journey as a leader is you're constantly just tweaking and adapting and just changing slightly the way you communicate and thinking as well. I think it's definitely an important thing for people to be, you know, you want to be authentic, and that's presumably the reason that you're picked for the roles and people see the potential in you to develop into stronger leaders. But you want to then be able to have that flexibility to change and adapt as you learn and develop yourself. Talking about cultural fit, and we're seeing a lot across the region of multinationals looking for succession planning and bringing in where possible local leaders for local markets and geographies. And it's sometimes a real struggle because there isn't always the, I guess, maybe the small C cultural fit between the business and maybe some of the areas that they're operating in. Benny, when have you seen sort of any examples or what are you seeing in terms of, I guess, succession planning or where corporates are kind of missing the point on talent and talent development within Asia Pacific? Is there anything that, around that area that you sort of want to discuss, and we can talk a bit further on that?
Yeah, I mean, maybe I want to share something because, like Margaret, I mean, I've gone through the long and difficult route, right? Maybe kind of like I live in different countries, 8 countries actually. I just make a quick count, and then I kind of like work in different places, visited them on a very frequent basis. So months, if you count the number of hours or days that actually been in places like Korea and Japan. So it's a tough way. But when I was in Tyco and Agreco, right, we actually placed leaders who were actually Europeans or Americans into Asia and hoping that they can lead the team because, you know, these are all high potential leaders. Eventually they can go back into a role where they can say that, okay, they are global because they've done, check the box and done that before. It's challenging, right? I mean, I got like a German who was trying to run a Japanese team, and then a British guy overseeing a Korean organization. The Koreans don't speak very good English, so there's really a huge communication gap. And then vice versa, you know, the Japanese are always saying yes, yes, when actually, you know, they are probably refusing to do some of the missteps that the leader has kind of told them to do. My feel is this, right? Either way, there's always a lot of challenges. And putting the lens and being having empathy is very important.
Right.
And I think as a young leader, it's okay to take hard knocks. You know, you go inside that, as I said, maybe the young British guy leading a Korean team, you learn it the difficult way. But it's important to have mentors. I mean, like Margaret, you know, we have enough mileage to kind of tell them, hey, don't do something silly, like do something the right way, right? Maybe, you know, have a one-on-one session. Don't try to yell across, you know, a team of people because you feel a bit frustrated. And that kind of things help and really build a kind of thrust across the tribes, as I mentioned.
Yeah.
But Margaret,
I completely agree. One of the key catchphrases I seem to commonly be saying to other leaders is put yourself in their shoes and really try and understand where they're coming from. And it's not easy. It's not easy for some individuals to do that. It's easy to put yourself in their position, as in their position at work. It's a different thing to put yourself in their physical shoes. Mm-hmm. So have you asked the question, what's going on in their mind? What else are they thinking about? What other things are they needing to consider culturally versus business? And really get to know them before you start, you know, trying to lead them. Because the way you motivate, the way you connect, the way you inspire individuals is very, very different across different cultures as well.
Is there a balance between, you know, going into a new team and saying, asking lots of questions about their teams who they are, their family life, and getting to know people and trying to understand, you know, really what makes people tick, and then laying over that your authority as a leader. You want to get that balance, right, because you want to seem vulnerable but also authoritative. And I guess that's quite a fine line to tread. Yeah. Have you got any, I'm putting you on the spot a bit here, any sort of practical tips or advice or things that you've learned along the way that have really helped you to sort of, from the first couple of days that you go into a team, what are the things that you would do or wouldn't do maybe? And maybe we can revisit that question a bit later on if I'm putting people on the spot there.
Well, for me, I think you want to define a leader as not somebody that you control over a team, but letting the team control a situation or a challenge, right? If you put it the other way around, then people are with you, right? So we can go for a drink, we can go for a meal, and we are talking about a situation we want to overcome. I think that helps refresh the whole dynamic, right? Whereas if you think, yeah, I'm the boss, I'm going to come here and tell you what to do,
yeah,
there is a vast gap between, you know, you and the team.
I'm with you, Benny. What I've noticed, and I counsel a fair bit, Michael, is that actually everybody is human, regardless of what culture, regardless of where you go around the world, everybody is human. And there are certain elements that people appreciate, care, empathy, you know, actually curiosity towards the individual and what they're doing and their family, etc. Obviously, there's a fine line as how deep you go, but it's entirely up to the individual as to how much they want to share. But I'm with Benny completely, because I think I've seen a lot of individuals who go into an organization almost as if they're wanting to parent the organization and actually strike the rules, you know, make the rules and make sure that everybody is within that and make decisions on behalf of others. The best leaders are those that actually leave the decision-making to the individuals that are accountable for what they need to do. And the job for us is to really coach and get the best out of these individuals, build their confidence, make sure that they feel supported and backed up, developed. Sometimes the feedback needs to be hard, just to make sure that they are constantly working through. But the intent, the care, why we're doing it has to be really, really clear. And when you get that balance right, you see magic. You see absolute high-performing teams, you know, running away with you, and you're super proud in terms of what they've been able to achieve.
It must be incredibly rewarding. Sorry, the reward of sort of going in and seeing members of teams really flourish and accelerate in the business must be fantastically rewarding. When you know, essentially, you get a fairly short time of, if you're doing international assignments, it might be 3 years, and really within that you've got 6 months of or so bedding in, and then maybe 6 months of looking at where you're going next and doing that sort of thing. So it's not, yeah, a lot of time to be really making a huge impact. So I think that's a really good way of putting across how you can make an impact and deliver and support, really. And that's what you're there to do, yeah, and accelerate. Yeah. Sorry, Benny, I interrupted you.
One of the tips that is really to kind of share the culture, right? Food and drinks.
Yeah.
You notice that, if you are a newcomer, a foreigner coming to a team, you're bringing off to share the food, the local food, right? And I think that's the way of kind of like really kind of assimilating you into the culture. And yeah, if you are able to kind of really enjoy and together with the team, they feel a level of comfort, right? That you are going to be part of them. And that's going to be very helpful.
I'm with you, Benny. And just trying the food, even if the spiciness doesn't get to you and you end up sweating like mad. It's magic, you know, the way that you can connect accordingly. The other point for me, Michael, is that when you do go in for an assignment, it's so important for you to go in knowing that you have to build succession plans and stronger leaders when you come out. And if you have that intent in mind, it works, because the whole delegation, the whole building the organization and the leadership team becomes your first and foremost. And then seeing them develop means that as they develop, you'll have a sustainable business when you leave.
Yeah, and I think one of the comments that came out of the retreat, actually, in one of the sessions we were doing around talent was around succession planning. And there was a comment made about how most of the people in the room, when they do succession plans, probably the people they pick at the start of that process might not necessarily be even in the running at the end of the process. But it's the exercise and the understanding the teams, the understanding the talent that you have and that's required. And that process in itself is hugely, hugely valuable and part of that process.
And expectation management, more than anything else. This is, we're raising the bar. This is what we expect you to do. And some of the talents won't make it through that process. But actually, when you can do that and everyone knows what great looks like, then it's amazing how they all start to thrive and drive towards that. So there's the other piece.
So Benny,
I was just going to kind of share it with Margaret. One of the challenges that we find it difficult, right, in different teams is really to build a burning platform. When you know you're coming in and the team looks as if they are on a holiday mode all the time and they're not performing, right? So how do you come across as a bad guy with a burning platform and motivate them and at the same time win their trust and cooperation? That's the difficult part.
Yeah.
You don't want your entrance as the new leader to be the burning platform, do you? That everyone else gathers around to try and solve. You know, you want to be there to help them and bring them on. I want to go back to just Benny. You started to talk about, you know, building new teams and understanding. We've just been talking about sort of cultural diversity and behaviour. Where we're seeing a lot of companies that have, you know, maybe retrenched and are restructuring. And bringing either teams together or separating parts of their business. We're seeing a lot of new leaders or leaders being put in and strengthening their leadership teams. Looking to build stronger and more diverse teams, and I'm assuming that those two things are now sort of synonymous with, you know, more diversity comes a stronger team. But what can you give any examples of what organizations are doing or should or can be doing in terms of strengthening their leadership teams? I mean, we can look at things like setting purpose, team alignment, and ultimately execution. But with an umbrella over those things, have you got any examples of where you've seen that done well or maybe not so well? And Margaret, maybe if I can come to you first on that.
On that. So for me, Michael, I think diversity has different meanings depending on where you are around the world. I have a team in India, and if we talk about diversity, the definition is different. It depends on background, experience, you know, province, where you're coming from, the languages you speak is very different to what I would see and do if I was in Australia as well.
Right.
But, and it is a journey for us within GSK. I think the conversations are becoming stronger, both at the recruitment side, but also in talent reviews, in terms of the value that diversity brings to actually good business outcome and performance. It's not a nice to have, but actually something that is absolutely necessary in order for us to be competitive. And so we're doing a few bits and pieces across the board. But I do think there's more work to be done as we move into it. And then the other element to it is not just about diversity and getting those individuals into teams, but actually the inclusive nature in which the teams operate and the culture that we're creating, which is just as important. And so those go in hand for us as we start to work through this journey at GSK.
I want to come back to your role on the Diversity Council at GSK, Margaret, in a minute. But Benny, have you got any sort of thoughts around where you've seen You know, leadership teams being strengthened through diversity, and where you feel that things can be done better, particularly maybe given that you've worked for some, you know, non-Asian headquartered companies, looking at maybe what talent looks like from different lenses. I don't know if you can sort of discuss that a bit.
Yeah, in fact, what I'm observing now, right, aside from diversity, is really the purpose of the organization. Right? The millennials and the new employees are looking at. In the past, it was making more money, right? Let's grow bigger. And let's become the number one in this particular sector. That's not going to cut it anymore, right? The employees today are looking for something that is more meaningful, right? Whether it's going to be in terms of how it saves the planet, in terms of environment, in terms of sustainability, how do we make a change to the whole community? And those are the catalyst of getting the right motivation of people today. So it's very different. And the purpose, therefore, has to be one which is noble enough that will get the right talent on board.
And then that then permeates throughout the whole company and the whole sort of the from the recruitment process to succession planning to leadership development, because that should be the sort of the DNA of the company and what everyone believes in. You know, you'd like it to be the reason everyone gets up in the morning and goes to work to a large degree. I'm not sure everyone has that, but it should be, and it's as you say, it's a noble goal to attain. Margaret, yeah. So going back to your own hat, and from what Ben has just said, how does that fit with sort of some of the work you're doing? And a lot of it is not education as such, but it's informing people who've assumed that, you know, everything's going well and we're growing hugely in this part of the world, and you know, we have a bit of a talent challenge, but everyone has that. How do you help sort of inform those conversations and open people's experiences when they're not, you know, not in this part of the world, particularly in the last couple of years where they physically haven't been able to travel, but you're getting, you know, maybe board members or senior members of teams not being able to physically see. How do you have those conversations, or what sort of conversations might you have?
Yeah, I think it's two pronged to some extent. So agitating the bulk of the organization to really dream big, to actually inspire them to think that they could all become global leaders, you know, with the support and their own development mindsets, et cetera, I think is really important. And I say that more with also a very Asian-focused perspective, because having a value on your voice and actually elevating your voice and saying, I'd like to have a go, I think I can be equally talented in delivering on one of those big projects that happens to be outside of Asia, is a big deal, it seems, for many Eurasian talents. And it's, you know, there's cultural elements and the reasons why individuals will do that. So agitating a little from the bottom up approach, I think is healthy. And I try to do that with many colleagues and obviously individuals in the region, to really start to do that. And we're doing that from an Asia Embrace perspective. And some of that is education, training, awareness. You know, there's a lot of things that we could be doing. And we've got a lot of programs ongoing that actually will help to stimulate that. On the other side, from a top-down perspective, I think we're still doing a fair bit of awareness at the moment. And a lot of questioning around the what ifs. And just trying to agitate from a top-down perspective in terms of senior leaders, and are we having the right conversations in talent reviews? Are we talking about one style of leadership that we're all aspiring to, or actually can two very different individuals deliver the same outcome, but they happen to have different styles because one is coming from the West and the other one's coming to the East? And do we have a priority on one or the other? I equate it to seatbelts. I know it sounds very basic, but when seatbelts were not mandatory, laws were put in place and everybody needed to put it in, yeah? And then quotas were there in terms of, you know, you're getting penalised if you didn't have your seatbelt on. But now we get into a car and we naturally put it on. until we naturally put on our seatbelts from a naturally, you know, looking at a talent from a more diverse perspective, I think there is a role for us to continue to agitate and look at our quotas. We're doing very well on our quotas and our commitments. We are doing some really good stuff, but obviously we could do more and we will continue doing more from that perspective. And it's at that senior leadership perspective that we're wanting to agitate a little bit more, because as individuals look up, they also need to have some role models that actually look like them, you know, and actually have a different style of leadership that actually demonstrates that it can be done differently, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the whole aspirational piece is so, so important for people. Otherwise, you get that the bamboo ceiling, I think it's been called in various places, where, you know, you're just not seeing any people that sound, look, reflect who you are and what to be sort of brutal about it, what a large percentage of your customers are increasingly going to be looking for. Benny, any thoughts around that? And I'll be sort of looking to wrap things up as we come to the end of the time.
Yeah, I think what Margaret said about agitating the senior leadership is very important, right? Because, you know, the senior leadership, they reach a certain level of success is because of what they have been doing in the past, and without that acute understanding that you got to look at it differently, right? You cannot have the same way of managing a talent such that he's going to be the same as you in order to be successful, because the world has changed, right? The market has changed, technology has changed, everything is disrupted. So using the same mold, it's not going to cut it. And I think that's something that they need to realize. Very often, in my experience, is that it's hard to kind of like remind that, because they just forget. They think that I've been successful, it will be the same way.
I think I've seen some really great leaders who essentially their role has been to manage themselves out of their position, because they're grooming their successors so well, and realizing that their successors are likely to have skills and experience that they don't have. And so to see that is really refreshing. But I think absolutely that sort of says, that resonates with what you just said, Benny. It's about understanding that you don't have all the skills and experience, and things need to change as time and technology changes with it. I just want to sort of ask for a piece of advice from both of you. A lot of, as I said earlier on, a lot of companies going through very large scale restructuring or change, and it can be quite disconcerting for a lot of teams and individuals. Have you got any advice that you might give to leaders in the midst of sort of change or restructuring, and who might be sort of losing sight of opportunities which this disruption can bring? Any sort of words of wisdom that you might want to impart before we end the session? Margaret?
You want to go? Yep. So, we're all going through restructuring and changes on a daily basis. One of the things that I think is incredibly important for organisations to do is as we look at the restructure and we start to pitch out in terms of what long-term business strategies are going to be and the type of culture that we're wanting to create as we start to build and deliver those strategies, I think it's always really important to ask the question, have we got the right leaders in the room to deliver it? And I don't mean that in a way that says, the leaders in the room are no longer good, but it's actually fit for purpose. And you need different leaders at different times. And I think it's really easy in an organization where it's going restructure to try and save everybody, to see how many individuals you can hold on to and not make redundant. But actually the reason you're doing a restructure is for a particular business purpose. And so always to look outside also to ask the question, actually, is there a type of leader that I need in order for me to deliver this business strategy? Yeah. In order for me to deliver the culture that we're wanting to move towards. And if I don't have it in-house, it's actually okay to go outside. And that's what I'd always be looking at in terms of the diverse talent that's outside. You know, if it is diversity, if it is ESG focused, et cetera, then who do I need in order for us to succeed? So that would be my advice.
Great, thanks, Margaret. Benny, Any thoughts?
I think Margaret has really kind of hit the nail on the head. The only thing I want to add is that in terms of restructuring, looking at how the business model is changing, therefore you need people who are more innovative in terms of how they can transform the business and also transform themselves, right? At the end of the day, it's the people. So it's being able to transform themselves, transform the team, so that they can meet the goals of the organization in the future. So that's my last 5 cents.
Excellent. Thank you. I think it makes it much more interesting if you can look at yourself developing, growing, changing as well as part of the business. And it's much more exciting learning and new things and meeting new people. On that note, lovely to have you both with me today. And thank you very much for your time and your input and your thoughts. Best of luck with your various restructuring and reorganizations. And look forward to catching up with you both very soon. Thanks, Margaret. Thanks, Benny. Pleasure to have you here.
Thanks, Michael.
Thanks, Michael.